Welcome to A Higher Branch, a source of practical and powerful information for busy people dedicated to boosting their personal health and professional performance. I'm your host, Sam McCall. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of A Higher Branch. And today we're talking about the power of meditation in conquering your limiting beliefs. A few weeks ago, I recorded one of my best podcasts ever with Barry Nicolau. And I know Barry is an avid listener of our podcast as well. Barry, thank you so much for recording what was an eye-opening podcast about limiting beliefs. And the practical takeaways from that have been incredible based on the feedback we've had from all our listeners. So today we're looking really at this topic from a different level, because a lot of our negative beliefs are in the subconscious, and the two ways where you can reprogram the subconscious is during hypnotherapy. And a shout out to Lynn McPherson, who recorded awesome videos on that topic with us last year, but also through meditation and mindfulness. So we have in the studio with us today, yes, live in the studio. I haven't seen this man in quite a few months and I miss him. We have Tom Sullivan. Tom, welcome back to A Higher Branch.
Thank you, Sam. It's good to be back.
Yes, good to see your face. And it's such a shame we missed the Upgrade Your Life 2021 event. But I feel we needed that breather to gather our thoughts. And the world is a totally different place. 2021 was going to be about forever young, about longevity. But next year's event, which will be on January 22 of 2022.
I like
those numbers. And it'll be at the Hyatt Regency. So for all our listeners, if you haven't signed up to our mail list, because people on our mail list will be the first to get the invitation to this. And we've got some incredible speakers and thought leaders. We've got an amazing new format that everyone is going to love. I'm really excited about it. And of course, Tom is going to be there, who is part of our permanent faculty here at A Higher Branch. So getting back to today, what we're going to talk about. But before actually I do that, for those of you who don't know who Tom is, he is a teacher at heart. He's an author, a speaker, and he's Sydney-based with over 10 years experience studying, practicing, and teaching meditation. Tom was in the corporate world, as I am in. So when he speaks really from a relational point of view, a lot of people in our community relate to him. And I love the fact that he's gone from the corporate world to meditation, and now he's diving into yoga as well. So he talks to us through our lens, the lens that we can relate to, and I love that. And he's really passionate about meditation and mindfulness and it being more accessible to people. And more recently, he's featured on some great podcast episodes on the balance theory with my friend Erica and my other friend Helen on her Whole Health podcast. And now Tom is the founder of A Still Mind, a company that delivers meditation and mindfulness training to groups and individuals. And if you haven't done a meditation session with Tom, please look him up. And now in the age of Zoom, you're going to get a lot out of it, even if it's not done in person. If you're here in Canada, the US or London. So to kick it off, I want to list some of the negative beliefs that I have experienced personally and in the coaching that I've done with my clients. And some of these statements are going to maybe be familiar to you or resonate with you, or maybe it's from people that you know who walk around with these. Negative beliefs is like a virus on our operating system, in our feelings and our thoughts. And to use what Barry said, we are like eagles, but negative limiting beliefs put us in a chicken coop and makes us think that we are chickens. So we look at us, we see chicken feathers instead of seeing ourselves as eagles that can fly to incredible heights. So I want to go through some of these negative beliefs that I've collated over the years, as I said, through my personal coaching. And I myself had these negative beliefs in the past. And earlier on, I was sharing this very idea with our marketing and communications person, Charlotte. And she said, really? You had negative beliefs? And I said, yeah. So you could imagine I've built an incredible business, great relationships. In all the eight areas of life, I feel like I'm climbing higher. Yet I've had a terrible upbringing experience. I went through war-torn Lebanon to get here. I grew up with many insecurities. I was extremely shy as a kid. We came from a very poor family. I'm not telling you this because I want to big note myself or gain pity. This is something that David Goggins says as well, and that is, if I can do it, trust me, you can do it. So I'm going to read out some of these negative beliefs. And these are in the eight areas of life. If you haven't already done this activity after listening to mine and Barry's podcast, go through and list some of your negative beliefs in the eight areas of life. Start with health, love, family, work, friendship, learning, wealth, and charity. And these eight areas fill eight fundamental human needs for energy, intimacy, unconditional support, fulfillment, belonging, growth, freedom, and of course, contribution for charity. So if you cycle through those eight areas and really be honest with yourself and say, what limiting beliefs am I carrying around that's stopping me from living my best life in those eight areas? Because every day that you miss out on living your best life, or at least climbing higher in each of them, is a tragedy. I'm going to list some of these limiting beliefs. Let's start with health. I'm not strong enough, or I'm going to get injured if I start this routine, or I'm going to get sick if I go out in the rain. They could be really small limiting beliefs, but piled on top of each other, they add up. And then you're carrying around this burden that just drains your energy. Other limiting beliefs is I'm not lovable. I have no value to give or make a contribution. I don't know how to love. My parents messed me up. That's a common one. I'm not good enough. What's the use in learning something if I can't apply it? No one wants to listen to me. Nobody cares about what I'm saying. I don't deserve to be wealthy. I live in a poor area. I went to the wrong school. I didn't get a university degree. Things just don't work out for me. I'm not going to try because I always fail. Or I'm going to get hurt. That's a common one in relationships. Another popular one in relationships, I need to be fixed. So I need someone to fix me in a relationship. And lastly is I don't trust myself, which is a common negative belief. Anyway, on that point then, we've said that negative beliefs is a virus on the operating system. And 85% of our operating system comes from the subconscious. So we really need to reprogram our subconscious. And as I said earlier, the best way to do that, Tom, is through meditation. First of all, what can you tell us about negative beliefs? What are your thoughts on what I just listed and went through?
I'm really glad that you brought those out. A lot of that stuff is part of a spiritual practice, is to take that self-reflection and to take a hard look at yourself. One thing that I do a lot with my students, and especially because we do deal with thoughts a lot in the practice. So thoughts are the things that keep you away from the present. And yeah, the goal of yoga or the goal of meditation is presence, living in the present, because there is where all the gold is. That's where all your insight, intuition, inspiration to live your best life really comes from, and you can tap into that. It's really about how do you reframe your relationship with your thoughts, because guess what? You can't stop them from coming. You can't just put a barrier in place or something like that. Time will change it, but there needs to be a conscious reframing that happens. So how do you start? And the way that I typically would deal with my students with this, and how I deal with myself in my own personal practice, if you're reading out any one of those things, I'm not good enough, not strong enough, whatever it might be, if your best friend, someone that you loved, or your close family member that you love, said those things to you, what would you say back to them?
Wow, yeah, it's quite thought-provoking, yeah, and
what,
confronting.
What would you say? So you'd say something positive and reinforcing, going like, yeah, you can do it, like you would have these sort of things. But when we do that with ourselves, we seem to believe it, like, and we're really hard on ourselves. So it's that initial thing of treat yourself like you would you're somebody that you love. So when you hear those things, move it from to more of a sort of compassionate space. Have compassion for yourself. You're doing your best, right? You've got a desire to change. It's a function of the mind, and you will have negative thoughts. Over time, they will change. But in the way that you want to actually stop doing that is to start to reframe your relationship with your thoughts. The practice of meditation allows you to start to move from a subjective point of view to an objective point of view. Because when you start doing a basic concentration meditation practice, and that might look like you're following your breath, right? So you're just trying to be, again, we're trying to use something that's happening right now as an anchor into the present moment. We're just trying to get into that golden space of what is happening right now, tap into that present. So as we start to follow the breath, and especially when we first start that practice, what will happen is thoughts will drag your attention away. thoughts from the past, I've failed, I've done whatever it is, or thoughts of the future, I can't do that because I'm not good enough, or whatever it is, and you go into these different spaces.
Actually, when I first started meditation, one of the negative beliefs or thoughts that would pop into my head would be, this isn't going to make any difference. This is a waste of my time. For a type A personality, the people that are listening now who are really busy, that's, I can almost predict that's what they'll be thinking.
Yeah. You know? I'll say to those people directly is, and I say this quite often, this practice has been existed for time immemorial and it hasn't changed. So you'd be an absolute mug to throw that out, basically.
Yeah. You know,
if you've got a system that's been in place that people have seen benefit from, like myself, I'm so passionate about it, I want to teach and share it because I understand the value of it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I met teachers at the start that embodied the practice. And for me, they were being the most shining lights of my life. I meet these people, I'm like, wow, they're caring, they're giving, they have all these qualities that appear to give you a good life. So understanding the fundamental practice and the value in that, we're all logical people. I'm a very logical person. It makes sense to investigate that. And when you actually go into a lot of these practices, at the very start, they're like, if you don't take my word for this, practice in earnest. And if you don't, if it doesn't work for you, then don't do it.
Well, from my personal experience, when I persisted, that's when I started noticing this incredible calm. And it probably hits you around the 10-minute mark. I don't time myself, but I'm guessing it's about that. And the longer you sit in meditation and your mind just quietens and the monkey brain just gives up, it's like a state of, who is this person? I'm not familiar with this state. And it's incredible. Once you feel it, you get addicted to it and you think, oh, I have to keep coming back to this state.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing is, the deeper you go, the more bliss you experience. So it's a more bliss. It just, you go into deeper, more and more bliss. So samadhi, when you have that union with everything, it's the most incredible experience ever. Like, it's the highest of the high, and it's this wonderful feeling of connectedness. And you have it. And from my experience and from other people I know that do certain practices, is that's when all of your good ideas come in as well. Like, literally inspiration comes into you when you open yourself up. And we say from a yogic point of view is that you're connecting to the cosmic creation, but in that comes everything. So all of the intelligence that you need to make your best life possible, you're tapping into that source. It actually feels a little bit like this. It's like you have a plug at the top of your head and it starts to move through the body. You know, it took me a long time to get there. Some people are lucky and can go into those states quite easily, quickly. One of my teachers who's in Cambodia, he said when he was younger, the first time he sat down, he went straight into that state. And he was probably the most advanced yogi I've ever met. We won't go too far into the whys and things like that to that. But these states are very accessible. And the beautiful thing about the yogic science, people have a bit of a common misconception about what yoga means. The yogic science is very similar to, and this is why I love the things that you've always talked about and of being part of a higher branch, is it's a holistic practice of which meditation is a part of it. What people call yoga, or they're basically postures, is a precursor to meditation. But, you know, yoga as a whole is a whole different system in it, and it's about understanding that you are part of everything, and it's basically a way to tap into that with the ultimate goal of you living your best life. So there's still the same objectives that we're all looking for. Everybody that's listening here is likely looking for ways to improve their life, or ways to find inspiration, ways to move through things. These are not new feelings that people have had. These feelings have been around for as long as, again, for as long as this recorded history is. For me personally, as my own personal mission, as I continue to be a student in this, but as I start to teach it as well, it's about letting people know that there's much more to this practice. The reason behind all of this is the same reasons that we're looking for now. And they're really powerful, scientifically tested. It's through self-inquiry. Yep. So it's something that you do yourself and you experience.
And I read research last year that people who have meditated for 2 years or more can reverse their age by 7 to 14 years and actually look younger, feel younger, the cells are younger. Extremely powerful. I mean, if I said there was a pill on the planet that you could buy and take every day, but you have to chew it for 20 minutes. People would pay a lot of money to look 14 years younger, but this pill is free. It's called meditation. There's one thing you said earlier. I say it, a lot of people on this podcast say it, and it's living your best life. And it's become a bit of a cliche. But what does that mean for you as a meditation coach when you say living your best life? Because for some people, say, living my best life is carrying around Gucci bags, driving Ferraris.
It's pretty simple. Like, I love buying sneakers, right?
Yeah.
And I get a new pair of sneakers and I love them. I'm like putting them on at every opportunity. 2 or 3 years later or whatever, I'm like, oh, they're in the back of the cupboard. It's the same thing. You can apply that to anything external. Mm. You can have a moment where it peaks, goes down. And again, if you can be objective and look at your life logically, you can go, you can apply that to pretty much every external piece of something, right?
Yep.
Anything, any material good will typically follow that same cycle.
Yep, the hedonic treadmill.
Yeah, sometimes in terms of the way that I teach and that sort of thing, it might be quite abrupt. But if you don't understand that already by now, take a look at yourself in the mirror and take some stock, look at your history and look at your past. And see if it follows these patterns, these same sort of patterns.
Where you buy something, you feel good, and then your happiness then dips, and you have to buy something else to boost it again.
Exactly. It's actually a really good lead into a large part of that actual journey into yoga. My whole practice is it starts external and it's slowly internalizing. As soon as we're born, we go into a state of externalizing and we create information. We use our senses to go out into the world. And we start to create, we generate information through that interaction. And then what we do is we start to put it through our own unique filter. In yoga, they call them samskaras. And it's basically your life's coloring. I think about my own personal experience of that. And I think school was a really big formative for those likes and dislikes. You have an interaction with somebody. You mentioned it on Barry's podcast and that sort of thing. It's like you are shy because this happened, you asked a girl out and she said no and that sort of thing, and then people will start to form a strong coloring around, I'm not good at that because I've done that before. Even if it was 20 years ago, you've kept that self-limiting belief, you've kept that same coloring. What we do in this practice is we really, in a best sort of metaphorical way, is you create a fire to burn through those. What it means in practical terms is you look at it objectively. Is this something that serves me anymore? If it's a yes, then continue thinking more of that. But if it's a no, stop the thought before it gets too far. When you're practicing, okay, so I'm moving from thought back to the present moment, thought back to the present moment. You're really creating a mental muscle by doing that kind of practice. So what happens is when you start to do that and you've got a new objective view of going, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be shy in these situations. I want to put myself out there. If that's one of these big barriers that's stopping you from doing that. So what happens is you get into a situation and the old neural pathways will start working again. So your initial thing is that if you're unconsciously doing that, then the same result will happen. But if you start to bring some conscious understanding into, as soon as that starts to happen, boom, you stop and you start your new pattern. And it will be hard at start. It's like any new thing. And so I remember Goggins talking about going for a run. He still needs to put his stuff beside his bed and he has to make that the first thing he does. So typically what he did when he was fat and lazy is that he just got out of bed and got a milkshake or whatever. He's okay, I'm aware of that. This is the new thing that I want to do. So when this happens, then X, Y, and Z happens after that. And that's going towards the place where I want to go. So the important thing is to practice that stuff.
Yeah.
You become stronger through practice.
Love that. Yeah. Really good analogy with what Goggins does. So then, is there a special type of meditation that allows us to transform self-doubt and negative beliefs? Is it a special type, or is meditation in itself is a panacea for all ills?
I think it's more the latter. I've gone on a long journey of meditation. I've practiced, the first kind of practice was a Buddhist sort of, very much like a mindfulness meditation. The practice I do now is called Ishtakriya. In my view, it's a really complete system. It includes the body. So we do some physical practices. We do some different breathing. I don't think that you necessarily need to say this is better than the other. I think that everything is warrants some personal investigation. But definitely in my experience, good teaching is a really big advantage to moving forward in your practice. My advice would be find somebody that you resonate with and give it a go. But the sort of strategy is, and this is super important, the strategy for a successful practice, I think, is the first is a strong desire. I talk about in my book, it's find your why.
Yep.
If you don't have a strong desire, if you half-ass your way into this practice and go, oh yeah, I heard it's going to be good. You can have skepticism, that's fine. I think healthy skepticism is really good. But if you don't have the drive or the fire for true change, then you won't stick with the practice. Because you mentioned it before, the mind just does not want to. You're fighting against these old patterns and that sort of thing, and that they don't operate in the now, so they don't want to do it, so you'll find a lot of reasons why not to do it. So that desire is the first key thing. You've got to have it.
Usually the desire comes from, there's two ways you can get that, grow that desire. One is to look at your whys daily. Say, for example, it could be you have kids. That's always my big whys. I want to be what I want my kids to be.
Yeah.
So I want to be that example. And that's a proactive desire. But for most of us, 98% of us or even more, the desire comes when we've hit rock bottom with something.
Yeah, yeah.
We're suffering from stress-induced anxiety or depression or unhappiness or a relationship breakup or pain of physical, emotional, mental. And then we hit rock bottom, we think, no, enough is enough. Mm-hmm. I need to do something.
Yeah.
And then you might, you know, see a meme or listen to a podcast like this. Okay, I'm going to meditate. That's what I'm going to do. That'll fix me. Meditation will fix me. And unfortunately for a lot of us, that's where the desire comes from.
Yeah.
And is there a different approach for either one of those two desires? If you have one client that comes to you who is in a bad state and they want to meditate, or you have a client who is in a great state and they think, no, I just want to meditate because I want to get even better performance. Is your approach different?
I would approach things differently. I've been in both boats. I've got to situations where I'll go completely rock bottom, and then I'll go even further than rock bottom. I'll go to these spaces I didn't even realize. And then it is a great launch pad because you don't want to feel that way. I think it's good to have that contrast, and it's good to have those reasons why. Ultimately, it comes down to, it's like anything. If you run every day, you probably feel quite good. You start, or if you eat really good food, clean food, whole food every day, you'll start to notice that you feel really good. So my thing is, give me 6 weeks or give me 8 weeks of dedicated practice.
Yeah.
And then see how you go after that, and then go away from it and see if you feel any different. So I guarantee that, I know, this is the Tom Sullivan guarantee. I guarantee that if you gave it your best for 8 weeks, every day you showed up for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, but you gave it your best and you really did go into the practice, then you would probably find a new base level of how you felt. And typically people see that as calmness, that as less reactivity. You're typically happier. I always include gratitude practice, which is so important, especially for material wants and things like that. That's a great antidote for those, you know, what we mentioned before.
Yes.
Just being grateful for what you have is such a wonderful practice. And especially here, we have so much to be grateful for. We're very safe. We don't have diseases ripping through the place. And we're in a state where most people have a roof over their head and food in the fridge and one or two people that love them and things like that and care for them. These are things that it's so easy to take those for granted, but you can really start building up a good positive sides around that sort of thing. I guess the second thing, so the first thing I spoke about was, we talk about that desire. The second thing is good understanding of what you're doing. Now, I had a different entry point into this practice. My why came from an experience, which was kind of like a near-death experience sort of thing, although I didn't nearly die. But there's this whole big thing, and then it was basically finding out all about this. So that was a good driver for me. But I thought I could do it on my own. For a long time, I was like, oh no, I can make my own practice and that sort of thing. After 13 years of practice, and I've just done another teacher training in this Ishta Kriya, so I've done two different separate trainings in that, because for me, it makes perfect sense. But having the understanding of what you're doing and why you're doing it is really useful. And that, in the same way that you go to the gym, it's really good to get your technique down and understand what muscles you're working out in your body. But the best ways to do that, the regularity you should do it, but what's happening in your body, how you're doing it. The same rules apply in the yogic science as well, so that you can go through these. And what happens is you start to experience what happens when you're putting these different measures in place. So I mentioned before, we externalize. So we start external. So I start gross. I start in the body. And then I start to get in touch with the subtle body, the energetic body. And you start to, after a while, you start to feel that. and then you can start to feel what it's like to move that around. And your understanding, I've got the theory behind that and the reasoning behind that, it's such beautiful harmony between the body, and there's such an amazing understanding of people that have gone through all that and have put these systems in place. So having that practice and understanding behind you is really powerful as well, because it gives you the confidence to move through the practice.
So form is important in meditation as it is in yoga and exercise, and meaning that you really need to have someone guiding you who's experienced, so to get the form.
Yeah.
So you get more out of that meditation practice then.
Yeah, I think it's with anything, there's a delicate balance of understanding. But the third part, so if we just move forward from that. So again, the first thing is that why, that desire, really getting the fuel for the fire. Mm-hmm. The second part is, what am I doing? How am I doing it? Why am I doing it? That why am I doing this particular practice? The third part, the hardest part, but the most crucial part, is a surrender. So you do all of the work, you get up to a point.
Okay, yep.
So
yep.
Another little myth-busting fact for you is that people talk, so if I say, hey, look, I'm a meditation teacher to someone, blah, 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 they go, oh, yeah, I do my gardening and that's my meditation. I do my swimming, that's my meditation. So what meditation is? Meditation is a state where you're not thinking. So it's actually a different state. So there is a point. So what people are talking about there is I'm mindfully doing something. So mindfulness is one thing. So you're doing one thing, and you're immersing into that one thing, and you're loving it because it's great when you're in a conversation with one thing, and you're having a mindful conversation.
Yep.
It's beautiful.
Yep.
You know, like you go absolutely. So much deeper, you understand them, you've got better responses, or you're just in nature and it's, you're fully immersed into that. So you're just mindfully involved in that. So meditation is essentially a state where you need to surrender to get to that state, because the mind, there's a point where the mind just can't go any further. To go into this state that I'm talking about of unity and what it's like to plug into that power source and tap into that. The mind can't exist there. It doesn't work there. So I do everything in my practice to basically move. And this again, this is what the commonly used term of yoga is, to create a strong energetic body. So all these different poses is about opening up energetic channels. And so the more energy that freely flows through the body, the more you can bring into that surrender space, and you can drop in and you can allow more of the plug to come into the body. So that's what it's really about. You invite this intelligence in, and the intelligence allows you to open up the body into a certain place. So that's a lot of that, what we call like hatha or asana, which is that sort of side of the practice.
And there are physical benefits to that, isn't there?
Oh, massively.
People who are experiencing chronic pain, sometimes these new energy pathways release.
I've had my own problems with a disc, problem in my neck. And I've had these really interesting experiences as I go deeper into my practice, and you invite that intelligence in. For myself, spontaneously moving to different shapes. Like I'll start to put in my chest and I notice that it's alleviating those problems. It's only because I'm allowing that intelligence to come in and move through.
So
that's really the objective, is as you go, like that's what it's designed for, is it's to put your body into alignment, that sort of practice. That's what that's for. So it's like a precursor to get to the space where you find stillness in the practice, and then you can surrender into that no mind space.
And is that why meditation and yoga go hand in hand?
Yes, that is exactly why. I'm still a bit funny with that terminology, because meditation is as much yoga as yoga is yoga. So it's actually just one other arm of the whole thing. So the same way you call a higher branch, you're not saying, hey, look, it's love or health and that sort of thing. We're talking about yoga. We're saying the postures, asana, is part of yoga. But so people that go and do yoga and that sort of thing, and most yoga teachers don't even meditate, which is bizarre, because it's a much better entry point into the practice of yoga, of the now, of really tapping into that source that's available to everyone at all times. It's really cool, because yoga is, and meditation now, is so much more readily accepted by modern day society. Now's the time to start to understand more about the whole thing. Because we're only taking slithers of this thing, and the whole thing is designed to give you a better life. And so it's important now, this is part of where I'm going to go with my teaching, is to make people aware that, hey, it doesn't just stop at looking good in Lululemon or sitting for meditation. There is a whole part of this practice which is when you really start to tap into it, a lot of the things that we have as problems can, as just a natural byproduct, will fall away. The more comfortable we become observing our thoughts, the less power they have. The less power they have, energy flows where attention goes. So if you start to become more objective with your thoughts and you notice, I still have these problems with self-limiting beliefs, self and these thoughts and that sort of thing, but I'm at a reframing stage for me now. I try and make light of my old self-limiting beliefs. You know, and again, just try and change my relationship with those. In yoga, they see, if you've got a common thought pattern, they see them as like whirlpools. So they're almost like vortexes in your mind. So if you've got a really big thing, say your marriage has just split up, you've caught them cheating on you. So what will happen is there'll be a massive vortex. And we've all done it at some point. We've got to a point where I cannot get this out of my mind. It's literally every moment I have spare, it's sucking me back into that thought. Do you know what I mean? And then you spiral down that thought like you would a vortex. And by the time 3 or 4 minutes of she did this and he did that, and I wish it, and by that stage, your body is completely locked up.
Yeah.
There's tension, there's all this sort of stuff. You're basically in fight or flight mode. I talked about before about all the different postures about opening it up. So you're literally doing the reverse, closing yourself up to that.
Yeah. Because the body pays for the emotional.
It's just the way, and again, the yogic understanding, you start from the most subtle, more fine. So then there's energetic, and then there's the thought space.
Yep.
But they're all connected. But it's about when you start to understand the real functions of how that works, it allows you to be less to chance. People are like, oh, bad things always happen to me and that sort of thing. And there's always ways where people will justify the way they feel like shit. When you start to bring an understanding of this is doing this because this happened and there's ways to do it, the more understanding that you bring around that, the easier it is to start to move forward. Because if you just move forward and you listen to something inspirational and you've got that drive, but then all the old colorings come back in, all the old habits come back in, and there's no real effective change.
That's right. Yeah. So a lot of people go through that.
Yeah. So bring some
hope without habit.
Yeah. So exactly. So look at the functions of what's actually happening and do it from that space of I am being objective. I'm going to treat myself like I would a friend or a loved one. So in the same way that you would give advice to somebody that's going through something, give it to yourself. But you need to just take that little step back. Give yourself some space from that. And that's really what, when you first start sitting and meditating, it's one of the biggest things, because you start to see, you start to observe, okay, I can see that that is a whirlpool of thought. That particular thing keeps coming up, keeps popping up. Okay, so that makes sense. Okay, all right. So what happens when I start to go into it? Oh, I'm supposed to be just practicing on the breath. So I start to create that space. Instead of getting completely lost in your story, completely taken down that whirlpool.
In the vortex.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What happens is you can start to go, oh no, I want to treat myself like I would a loved one or a best friend.
Yeah.
And you start to, instead of just, okay, just take a breath, let the body relax. It's okay. I give myself compassion. I give myself understanding. And now I choose a new way to move through that. You've got to put the reps in to get to that point. Because if you're literally spent your whole life not knowing about this and not consciously doing that, there's a lot of momentum in the other direction.
You're not going to reverse it in one session. No, meditation. That's right. Yeah.
But you can just add little bits and pieces into your life. I love Abraham Hicks. I don't know if you've ever heard Abraham Hicks before.
No. It's Abraham X? Hicks. H-E-X?
H-I-C-K-S.
Oh, Hicks.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's these really
The Kiwi accent's coming out.
Yeah. it's an ongoing problem. But that's more like of a cognitive training that I do. So every day I get up, I walk my dog through the park. It's really nice. I like it. And I listen to some Abraham Hicks. And it's just about reframing. It's just the power of positive thought. That's really what it is.
Is that a podcast or is it a...
You can look it up on Spotify. There's usually typically 10 or 15 minute per short things. Yeah, just per day, just little things that you can have a listen to.
I love that,
It's just nice, like reframing. This is why, again, yoga as a whole system, because a lot of it is things like ahimsa, which is non-harmfulness to other beings. It's about respecting others. So there's a whole part of it. And so don't be a dick, basically. And look after your body, practice, and then go deeper into the practice from there. It's the same way in life. If you're hating yourself, you're drinking too much, you're eating like shit, you have toxic relationships around you and that sort of thing, and then you go, hey, well, I'm going to meditate 5 minutes a day. Is this going to fix me? No, it's not. You've got to embrace all of the different 8 areas of life, embrace different systems to understand that. It's such an integral part of most of our outcomes in life begin with thought as the precursor to everything. So the fact that people go to the gym but don't meditate is bizarre, because everything is predicated with a thought. So you should work on the predication part.
Yeah, well, meditation is fitness for the mind and the soul, isn't it, really?
I think on an initial entry point, let's not get too deep into soul and that sort of thing, especially if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I'm not sure about this. Let's park that for a while and just work on the practical side of things. There's a ton of really good scientific evidence to back up all of those claims and around the immediate health benefits, the immediate benefits of a change in your mental state through a deliberate practice. There's lots and lots of really good information and studies around that. As you further surrender into your practice and you experience that sort of stuff, find that sort of stuff out for yourself, but follow that sort of particular regime. But let it begin in your mind. Let it begin with an understanding that whenever you want to make change, whatever you want to do, it really begins in your mind. And so taking care of that, I think, is the most important thing. And then as an extension to that, and what is part of a lot of motivational things, is that you're actually really creating your reality from your mind first. And when you start to gain a mastery over, that's more in that deliberate conscious creation piece. That is a real thing. And again, it's only experienced firsthand, but you know, that there's been enough people talking about that again for time immemorial for it to make sense. There'll be a lot of conscious creators listening to this and that sort of thing that will agree and understand. And I know that you're one of those people as well, building the things that you've built. You've got to get to a point where you take out enough of the colouring that's going to stop you from doing that. And then once you understand the power of, hey, look, what I think ends up as things, you want to remove all of the things that you don't want to make that happen in the form of self-doubt and negative things and the like.
I think a lot of the biggest obstacle for people is meditation as a habit in their daily life. And like you said, people will sporadically go to meditation whenever they're going through a vortex, and it could be a vortex in any of the 8 areas of life. Their health suffers, or their relationship breaks down, or their family's out of control, or they lose their job or their business, or they lose friendships, or they stop learning and growing and reading books. So it can happen in any one of these areas. Then they hit a place that they think is rock bottom, and then they say, okay, I need to meditate. Now, from personal experience, I am a conscious creator, and I did not know that I was doing that for many years, being a co-creator of my external world. But it started happening really in leaps and bounds once I started sewing 3 rituals in my daily routine. And I talked about this at Upgrade Your Life last year. And I repeat these 3 rituals twice a day, once in the morning, I repeat it again at night. And those rituals are movement, meditation, and journaling. Yeah. Now, it could be 5 minutes of movement, 5 minutes of meditation, 5 minutes of journaling, 15 minutes. Or it could be 20 minutes of movement, 20 minutes of meditation, and 20 minutes of journaling. My point is that you can wake up and have a great day, and you're in a great state of mind, and you think, I only need 5 minutes. Or you wake up and you're having an average day, and it's going to be an average day. Or you wake up and you're having a bad day. Right. My point is, you need to sow those 3 rituals in your daily routine. Now, I am where I am in my life and business and relationships, what have you, not because I have a good day every day. I have some pretty average days and I have some bad days, but I still show up and I still move, meditate, and journal every morning and every night, the first hour, last hour of the day. And for those of you who are listening, as I said, the meditation for me can be 5 minutes sometimes. Or if I'm in a bad state, I'll go 20 minutes and I'll go deeper and deeper, and I won't get up until I'm in that state where my mind is calm and I've reframed all the negative beliefs that invade the gardens of our mind sometimes. So if you're listening, you're not listening to Tom Sullivan, who's a perfect meditation coach, and you're not listening to Sam McCool, who's a perfect, you know, holistic coach.
Believe it or not,
No, it's not. Nowhere near that. Nowhere near that whatsoever. Yeah. And the whole philosophy behind a higher branch is to keep climbing higher. Don't stop. Don't stop climbing. Whether you have $100 million in the bank, $1 million or $10 in the bank, you need to keep climbing in the 8 areas of life. And one of those is your health. And an integral in health is your 4 energies, is your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And sure, let's put the spiritual aside for a second, but meditation is a perfect antidote to the digital deluge and dementia we go through every day, and the negative beliefs that pop up from our and that have been sown in our childhood. Tom, what you're saying is be compassionate on yourself, and compassion starts with respecting that the mind needs to quieten, the mind needs rest, the mind needs a detox. So don't just go to the gym and smash it out. That's maybe good for your body, and that's even then it's doubtful, but the mind needs some reps as well. And the best way to get those reps in with the meditation is those 3 rituals that I talk about in that order. For me, movement must precede meditation.
Yeah,
for
same thing with my practice. It follows the same. Yeah.
Yeah. External to you internal. You do yoga, don't you, before your meditation?
Yeah.
So that's my advice to everyone that's listening as a snapshot or highlights and key takeaways from what Tom's saying.
I agree with you 100%. And I think that everybody is a little bit different. And there are certain practices which will work for certain people, but you've got to at least get to the point where what's going to make you feel better. And it is like you said, my life is far from perfect, but I know when I'm away from my best self, and I know how to get back to my best self. So at least I know those things now. And if I don't, it's only my own fault. And the problems just get smaller and smaller the deeper I get into that practice, and the more I do it, it just becomes a lot easier. So I heard a wonderful Buddhist speaker once, and he really talked about, again, with that external, with that material mindset, is that we want to create external conditions for our happiness. I wake up, the sun's got to be shining. Okay, that's the first thing. Oh, my favorite coffee place is open. Great, my friend's with me on a walk or whatever it might be. So you're going, that's what constitutes my perfect day. So what happens when it's raining? Or what happens when the coffee shop's closed or your friend can't come for the walk? So what, then your day's shittier? It's bizarre. You can't rely on external circumstances for your happiness.
Absolutely.
And for your understanding. Yep. So it's about making sure that you can internalize and understand that you can create that yourself. And you do that through rituals and routines and habits. If you're listening, if you don't have that kind of practice, what would it take in 5 years' time if you look back and you go, oh, I'm at my best place. So your biggest dream, this is where I want to be in my life or whatever it is, you would invest so much time. You invest, and we're not talking about big amounts of time. Would you do an hour a day to be living your complete best life? So if you look back in hindsight, you go, of course I would do that. But it's having that, so it's okay. Have trust in, and that's why I always go back to yoga, and again, why I love this system that we have at a higher branch. It's using tried and true methods and practices, making sure that you're living holistically, framing things in the right way to actually build that. I think that's a really super important thing, but take the time to take some stock of yourself, be an observer rather than super involved in it. Try and remove yourself a little bit from your own story. So something happens and then you want to justify why it is the way it is. So if you can start removing that part of it, if somebody tells you their problem, typically you know what will fix it. Of your best friends, like, oh, hey, I'm wondering about whether to see that guy. I don't see that guy. He's a jerk. But for yourself, it's very different because you've got all the backstory and there's this reason and that reason. In your heart of hearts, you know that it's not right or whatever, but you're stuck in all these old coloured thoughts and things like that. So it's a really good starting point to start to just even just practice, hey, I'm not my thoughts, because I have a conscious choice over when to stop. I'm not just always moving around like from one thing to another in that woe is me story sort of situation, because you're justifying every little bit of why you're not where you should be and that sort of stuff. It's like the only reason you're there is because you're believing the stories that you're telling yourself, and you're not consciously controlling how you're really thinking about those things.
I think the key word you mentioned there is being an observer. And the way to rewrite and neutralize old negative beliefs is to step out of yourself and notice your thoughts and say, would I talk to a friend like that? Because that's how I'm talking to myself. And the best way to achieve that is through meditation. And I love those 3 steps of the desire, the how, as in the form of meditation. And the third one is the most powerful, I think, that is the surrender.
Yeah, very hard to do. It is and it isn't. But it's a wonderful, when you do find that, go over that precipice, it's a wonderful space to be in. And it is, and it allows you to also understand, again, with that objective thing, is when something is out of your hands, you can surrender to it. You can understand there's things that you can change. There's a lot of stuff that, there's a global pandemic coming at the moment, which is affecting everyone's life in different ways. But there's not much you can do about that. You have to surrender to the fact that's what's happening right now.
Absolutely. Two of our frameworks is the 8 areas of life. But the second framework, that's not really, on our website, and we don't really publicize it, and it's something we cover at Upgrade Your Life, is the circle of conscious living, which is my 5-step process for witnessing, changing your thoughts and your feelings. Like you said earlier, it starts with a thought, then there's an action, and after the action, there is a corresponding feeling. So a thought could be, there's a person at the bar I want to go say hello to. The action will maybe, I'm going to go up and have a chat. But what happens after that is your feeling. So if they say, yeah, sure, take a seat, let's have a chat, you feel great. What happens, and this is something you can't control, just like a pandemic, right? You can't control circumstances, other people. What happens if they say, look, bugger off, I'm here with someone, they hurt your feelings. Do you know how to process that? Do you know how to practice acceptance? Or are you going to step into those shoes of all those negative beliefs that you grew up with? I'm not lovable, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not interesting enough. And that's where the game of life is won and lost, is in the surrender to the outcome. And meditation is such a powerful way of practicing surrender.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's made me think of, again, back into real life, back into my job and corporate side of things, was always being sales. And so in the same way, the analogy, you go up to a bar, I could lose a sale, but then I could make it all about me, and I can start to tell a story about, again, justification. If you apply these new tools that we're talking about, rather in the same way, like you were a trainer or like you were your boss, you can actually look at that situation in a more objective way, remove that coloring, remove the emotion from it, and go, okay, so what could I have done differently? What actually really happened there? And a lot of the time for myself, as I apply that consciously more to how I live my life and things like that, it's about going, okay, I could have improved that. My opening wasn't very good. I wasn't very confident. Or there's
what did I learn from it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if you can't, oh, that person was a dick or whatever it is, rather than going, because you want to try and protect yourself and that sort of thing. So
that's not a bad defense mechanism. It's better than blaming yourself. If I remember when I was a teenager growing up, if I made a pass or tried to interact with another girl and she rejected me or brushed me, then I would never say, oh, it's me. I say, maybe she's not in a good state. Maybe she doesn't want to talk. Maybe she's engrossed in a friend's conversation. Or maybe she feels self-conscious about the way she looks. So I always made it about the other person than myself. And I think that's one of the steps to practicing acceptance. It's not always about you. There's stuff going on in other people's lives, so you should never take it personally. So we can't finish this podcast without some sort of guided meditation. Are you up for giving us a short, even if it's 20 seconds, on how we can practice acceptance? Or what does it feel like to surrender in your meditation practice? What do we do during meditation to step us in that state where we are the observer and we say to ourselves, hey, I am not my thoughts. I am not my past. I am that deep inner essence. And because it's when we're in that state that all these possibilities and these potentials just expand in front of us. Mm. And I say this because I feel that every time I meditate, because I remind myself that I am not my thoughts, and it allows me to practice acceptance. So can you think of a meditation that we can do on the spot on this very topic of negative self-belief?
Yeah, I think we can. I think that the best thing would be to, and I've referred to it quite a lot today, is just experiencing what it's like to observe a thought and let it go. I think that's a really great entry point, just to start to understand the nature of the mind.
Yep.
But also understand that, that there is a level of control over that. So wherever you are, even if you're in a car or wherever you might be on a train or at work or whatever, typically what we want to do, and to find that stillness and surrender, I always make sure that everybody's sat upright. So typically you can sit upright on a seat, or you can sit cross-legged up against a wall, whatever it might be. What we can do is really start to, once we're in that position, the chin might be slightly tucked, We want to create stillness and softness in the body. So wherever we are, it's always good, I always think, at the start, to always just frame that practice out with maybe a deep breath. So just in through the nostrils, filling up the lungs. And just let it go out the mouth. Start to find the body becoming still more settled. And just see if you can start to find a nice, effortless breath. Relaxing the jaw. Letting the shoulders just melt away from the ears. Soften the hands, soften the stomach. Let go of the waist, knees and ankles. So we're going to be here for a minute. So just doing your best to avoid any movements. And coming back to the breath. Just start to notice where the breath shows up the most for you. So for me, usually I just focus on the sensation of the air moving in and out of the nostrils. So become really engaged or aware. It might be at the rise and fall of the chest or the stomach. But wherever you are, just finding that nice, effortless, soft rhythm of the breath. Noticing the cooler air as it comes into the body. Slightly warmed as it goes out. And so what we'll notice as we start to just get into the rhythm of that breath, thoughts will arise and take our awareness away from that experience that's happening right now of just immersing ourselves in the breath. So our strength in the practice comes from noticing when we are thinking. And oftentimes we'll notice what we're thinking and we'll start to justify or tell the story about that particular thought. What we want to do is just cut that off straight away. You might want to say just internally, thinking, just noticing that's a function of the mind. And then immediately, softly, back to the breath. Just back to the sensations in the body. The more immersed in that experience, the stronger the anchor into the now becomes. Thoughts will continue to arise and take that experience away. So again, just back to the thinking and back to the breath. If you're first starting this practice, it might seem like it's just taken away. Understand that is a normal part of the process. The more we practice, the quicker we become at bringing that back, the awareness back to the breath. The more we practice, the longer we can stay in that sensation of the breath. It may seem when you first start the practice that the mind even gets noisier. Again, that's completely normal because we are constantly distracting ourselves with external thoughts. So internalizing can be a lot at the start. Again, just relax the body, back into the breath. Just finishing the practice, bringing awareness to the chest, into the middle of the chest. And from there, just two or three things that you can find gratitude for today. Safety, security, roofs over our head, some food in the fridge, maybe some people that love you. And back out into your day.
Beautiful. I feel so calm.
Thank you so much, Tom. So for everyone that's listening, if you want to know a little bit more about what was covered in this podcast, you want to reach out to Tom.
Through Instagram is the best way. So just a still mind.
Beautiful. On Instagram and Facebook. If you want to go deeper into this practice, be a seeker. Be, what I say, a climber. I'm a climber. It's such an important area for me. It's food for the mind, and you can't starve your mind from that nourishing sense of calm that meditation gives you. It is something that you really need to look into.
Be an early adopter of the whole yoga practice. It's the new thing. It's going to come, and people are going to understand a lot more about why we're doing these things. So explore yoga as a whole. I would say we've got to the point where certain things are happening, and guess what? There's so much more behind this that's going to make so much sense and be such a help to whatever it is you're looking to achieve.
I love how yoga is coupled with meditation, because yoga is about movement, which is what I said earlier. One of the rituals should be movement when you first wake up. It's a beautiful way to start. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening, and thank you, Tom, for coming in again. I know you're pretty busy again these days, and we're all coming out of COVID and getting busier and busier again, which is a good thing. And as I mentioned up front, Upgrade Your Life 2022 is going ahead. It's on January the 22nd at the Hyatt Regency in Sydney. The speakers will be announced shortly, as well as the theme, and I promise you, you're going to love the theme of this event. When I say love it, I don't mean just love it externally as an observer. You're going to love it because of what you're going to get out of this event. It's going to make you impenetrable to negative thoughts and negative self-talk, and it's going to set you up for a great year in 2022. But until then, I hope our podcasts are providing some value in your life and setting you up for a great year in 2021. So on that note, as always, live consciously, my friends. Tom, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.